trying to conceal his surprise. Everything about this boy is sort of older than he expected. Clothes, hair, skin, a bit grey, sunken eyes too.
Right. Yeah. Great. Thanks for calling by.
Luke babbles about the job, the hours, the duties. He asks Tim to sit at the stool by the counter. Just 10 minutes, and they can close for lunch for half an hour and have a proper chat. A woman comes in, looking for a bargain.
Anything discounted?
Luke shows her the sunflowers. Striking. Gorgeous. 20% off. She takes them. Tim watches as he wraps them in tissue and sorts the cash and the change. Luke is telling Tim that his mother needs someone early Saturdays and occasional Sundays to help with boxes and general sorting, also front of shop while she finishes the displays.
You happy serving?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Worked in a newsagent.
Good. That's great.
But there is something about Tim that is a bit off. Difficult to pinpoint. And then as Tim leans forward, the smell hits Luke. Really bad BO. That's a no, then. Luke pulls back and forces a smile. His mum won't like that. Tim's out, then. But he will be polite, diplomatic, but he'll keep it short.
So you don't remember me? From the 10 tours?
Tim is staring at him.
No, mate, sorry. For so many people. I did it twice, actually. The longer route the second time.
You? Just the once. I did it the same year. He pauses. As Anna Ballard. And now Luke is stilled. Tim is staring at him very deliberately, unblinking. Luke stares back and is starting to get it. He narrows his eyes and thinks for a moment. Tim is looking at him really carefully, really oddly.
So, you a journalist?
No, I'm not a journalist.
Well, do you know what, Tim? I don't think this is going to work out, mate. No offence, but you telling me you don't remember Anna Ballard?
Luke is stilled again. What the hell is going on here?
Look, I don't know what this is really about, but I'm not having anyone here upsetting my mum any more over the Anna Ballard case, so how about you just leave, please?
But now Tim has taken a photograph out of his pocket.
Explain that, then.
Luke is temporarily nonplussed as Tim slaps the photograph on the counter. The picture is from the melee after the medal ceremony at the 10 tours. Scores of people. Luke scans the faces, narrowing his eyes to finally spot himself with two of his mates on his walking team, Andy and Jeff. To their right is a group of girls. One of them... Yes. He leans closer. It does look like Anna Ballard. It's a shock. He's of course seen her picture on the news, but Luke had no idea they did the tours the same year.
Look, I had no idea Anna Ballard was there that year, and I have no idea why you've brought this photograph, but I'm not going to discuss this with you. Understand? You need to go. Right now.
Tim then backs away, and Luke thinks, thank heavens, this guy's some kind of nut job. But instead of leaving, Tim puts the bolt across the door, turns the sign to closed.
Excuse me?
Just standing by the door now, staring at him.
Whoa.
A wave of more serious realization through Luke now. He moves forward to sort this. The guy is not big, not strong, and Luke reckons he can shoulder him out of the shop and see if he will piss off. Or maybe he'll have to call the police. But Tim has slowly pulled a knife from his right pocket. His eyes are bulging and locked on Luke's.
Through to the back. Now.
Luke looks at the knife's sharp blade. He is thinking of his options. The back door. Phone. Kicking the knife out of the guy's hand. For now he puts his hands up slowly, just at waist height.
Okay, mate. So how about we calm this right down?
Through to the back, I said. Luke walks slowly backwards. He can't risk turning away from the knife. Remembers now that the back door is bolted.
Christ.
You and Anna. She liked you. She was talking to you.
I watch. I see things. I watch and I remember.
No, mate. Really. I'm sorry, but you're wrong. I don't remember her. It was just everyone happy together.
You're lying. And now Tim's eyes are wild, furious. I watch her. I know.
And then very suddenly, Tim lunges forward and skims Luke's right arm with the knife. A surface slash, but instant and excruciating pain. Blood immediately. Luke is standing alongside his mother's workbench and glances left. Remembers. Luke grabs for the coffee jug really fast and hurls the scorching fluid at Tim. Some of it flows down Tim's leg, and he calls out in pain. But it misses his face, and there is another lunge with the knife. This time, a searing pain in Luke's thigh. A fast seeping of blood onto his trousers. They're on the floor now, and Luke is struggling to get up. Feels his thigh so wet. Tries to stand, but the pain is terrible, and next, a blow to his shoulder. And then he sees just a glimpse, the glint of red, reflected in the mirror his mother uses to check her displays. The handles, her favorite secateurs. The bright red handles just visible on the edge of the lower shelf. He uses the reflection to feel for them, stretching, stretching, and swings backwards. The terrible feeling of the blade deep into flesh. And then blackness.
Epilogue. Ella. Again, the trends change. Autumn brides seem to want more white this year. Instead of a swathe of the rich, warm palette, they want just a splash of it for accent. The orange, burgundy, rusts and pumpkin colours. I am opting for the softer, creamy whites, which work better in this mix, also in photographs. We have a really good supplier for gerberas and dahlias in the strong, statement colours. Gorgeous. I'm using masses of them. I don't mind more white, actually. So simple and classic, and I love that there are so many variations. Tony says, white is white, surely. Tell that to a paint child, I say. Tell that to a rose, or a tulip. Today I have a whole range of whites spread across the benchtop for a top table centerpiece. A favorite design, white roses just opening from the bud, with burnt orange calla lilies for the splash of color. Very simple, but very striking. I'm on my third coffee, working more slowly than usual. Seems to be the way these days. I daydream a lot, cannot help it, my thoughts often drifting to places I would rather they did not. And now I pause, staring at the new secateurs in my hand. I still feel strange, still unsure if the police will ever return my own. Evidence. Don't want them back, actually. What I want back is the old version of our lives. Before. I check the clock. Just one more hour until closing. A sigh. I must press on, get this done and into the cooler. We don't tend to get much trade at the end of the day, especially in the rain. Funny that the weather so affects what people buy. And now I hear a rustle outside the door, the surprise of a late customer, the tinkle of a bell and the shaking of an umbrella. I stand and move through to the counter to catch her eye. A shock. One of so very many. For a time we just stand, eyes locked, and I do not know what to do. I can feel tears welling, the shock, I suppose, but it feels unhelpful. I wonder why she is here. I'm nervous that she is here. I am looking at her, and I can hear my heart racing. I am remembering Matthew's voice on the phone. They found Anna's body in a freezer. At Tim's secret flat, the flat that, according to the terms of his father's will, he was supposed to let to help fund himself through university, but which, instead, he used as a secret bolt hole. The flat where they found his diaries full of photographs and mad and shocking rants, watching and photographing Anna since she was very young, hating her to talk to anyone else, keeping a record, watching, always. Watching. Apparently he would sometimes have dinner with the family and pretend to go home, but instead would camp out in an old stone shepherd's building high on the ridge, watch them all in the kitchen below, watch Anna until she went to bed, making notes in his diaries.
Ella, I'm sorry to surprise you like this. Do you have a moment?
What to say? I look at her, eyes sunken and sad, and changed forever, and I wonder if there is anything to say between us. Wonder why she is here.
Of course. Come through to the back. I was due to close soon anyway.
My manners again. Always with the manners. I move to the door to switch the sign to closed and pause a moment, closing my eyes to the picture. I do not want to think of D.S. Melanie Sanders standing on their doorstep, sent to break the news. She has been given a promotion off the back of the case, but told Matthew she did not want it because she felt it was his work, not hers. He talked sense into her, but I do understand. Such a struggle to go forward. She still wants Matthew to go back into the force, but he can't decide. I move the spare stool through to the workbench at the rear, but she opts to stand, turns down coffee also. I wonder if it is my place to ask the questions, do the small talk, how is she coping? Or what's the point? How does anyone cope with this? I decide to wait and find that I need to sit, even if she does not.
I was wondering how Luke is doing.
Is this really why she came? I don't think so. But I think of him, and I think of Anna, and feel guilty that I am so glad mine was the child to live.
Better, thank you. He's off the crutches. The shoulder is still tricky. He has quite a limp, but with physiotherapy, we hope.
Good. I'm glad he's improving. That's not why she's here. Why is she here?
I really am so very sorry about Anna, Mrs. Ballard.
Barbara, please, call me Barbara. She has looked away. My voice is cracking now, and so I pause. Take a breath.
I was the one who first brought him into the house, you know.
Tim. She twitches her mouth to the left.
Into the family. Into Jenny and Anna's little gang. I felt sorry for him. His mother never took any interest. Always off with her men. Did you know she had a fling with my husband?
I'm sorry. I don't know why I told you that.
I'm sorry.
Matthew told me everything. Tim's diaries. He set up a camera in his mother's room to blackmail her lovers. Made some cash. Then caught someone he did not expect. Again we lock eyes. And I see her lips trembling as she nods, a jerky nod that says, "Don't make me cry. Don't say her name again. Please."
So, turns out it was my fault, in the end.
Tim.
I felt sorry for him. Always out around the village on his own, even when he was quite little. I thought I was being kind, feeding him up, taking him in, but... She pauses. Turns out it was my fault.
You mustn't think that. I hear the echo of so many people saying the same to me, and regret the platitude. Guilt, we all learn, has its own rules.
He wants to come back, my husband.
She is looking at the floor.
Funny thing is, I'm actually considering it.
I miss him, you see. I find that I want to reach out to touch her arm, to offer some comfort, something. But I don't. I am wondering if she will go to the trial. Matthew says the charges are to be murder and attempted murder. Tim is expected to plead diminished responsibility, but Matthew believes the murder charge will stick. Turns out Tim set up the alibi in Scotland with chilling calculation. Picked an outdoor pursuit centre that he knew logged walking parties only as they signed in on day one. He booked in 3 days ahead of Anna's trip to London, supposedly for a week, but stayed for just 24 hours, enough time to post a couple of pictures on social media, careful to moan about limited Wi-Fi, and just enough presence to fool the police, who made only a cursory check on his alibi. Later reviews of all the CCTV footage confirm he actually returned to Cornwall to sneak onto the London train among the final passengers, disguised in a hoodie and sunglasses. He then followed Anna and Sarah from the West End Theatre to the club. It's still not clear why he killed her.
His diaries are rambling and incoherent, this obsession with other people looking at her. I can't bear the thought of it all, especially my poor Luke having to give evidence now. The truth? I wish Tim had died, that he never came out of that coma, that it was all truly over. There is an incredibly long pause, during which Mrs. Ballard says nothing at all, and so I fill it by babbling about the flowers for the wedding, my love of calla lilies, especially the rich, deep colours, burgundy and purple. I have something that I need to tell you. That's why I'm here, Ella. Is it all right to call you Ella? Of course. I smooth the fabric of my skirt, worrying and wondering what it is now. I was going through Jenny's room tidying up, and I found some stuff. I can feel my frown. Black postcards. A new stillness. I have talked to her, and she eventually broke down, owned up. It seems it was Jenny who sent you the first two postcards. She is very sorry, very ashamed. She was just very angry and lashing out, like I did. I'm not saying that is any kind of excuse, but she is very young, and she is very sorry. So Jenny, Anna's sister. There's more, I'm afraid. She sniffs a little. When you sent Matthew down to see me, Jenny panicked. I told her that you suspected me, you see. I was cross about that. And so she decided to confide in someone. Someone close. Oh, my God. Tim? Yes, unfortunately, Tim. It seems that's when he became more interested in you, decided to send some more postcards himself, also to start watching your shop. Such a twisted mind. We had no idea, but the police say he is very disturbed. This obsession with watching people. Anyway, that's how he came to recognize your son, from the Tentors. Started watching him, too. Got himself all muddled, all wound up. I hear a long breath escape, feel the shape of my lungs change. I have wondered why Tim became interested in us. So, the point is, I will completely understand if you want to inform the police. Her lip is trembling properly now. Because you may well feel it is Jenny's fault that Tim ended up taking an interest in your son. And so finally, I understand. Matthew said they found hundreds of photographs on Tim's computer. Pictures from parties and the 10 tours in school, with graphic and violent comments alongside the headshots of any boy he felt had taken an interest in Anna. Even spoken to her, completely innocently, however briefly. Luke was just unlucky. He genuinely doesn't remember meeting her or talking to her. I look down at the floor for a moment. I think of Luke, so proud when he finally put the crutches aside 2 weeks ago and walked across the room unaided. He has this terrible limp, but we are all pretending it will go, hoping it will go. Also, a dreadful scar on his thigh. Thank you for coming here to tell me, but there is no need to tell the police. Nothing to be gained. I am thinking of Jenny, so young still. What would be the point? What does it matter if the police believe all the postcards were from Tim? Mrs. Ballard closes her eyes, the relief coursing through the muscles in a wave. First her face, then her neck, her shoulders. Thank you, Ella. I expect her to leave, but still she stands. I wonder what she is waiting for. She glances around the counter, to the cooler, with the displays. They have released her body now, for the funeral. Dear God, I am fighting again. It will not help if I break down. Not my grief. The director from the funeral parlor came last night to talk it all through with us. She pauses and I say nothing. Can't find any words. None. Mute. I am thinking of Anna on the train, green eyes all bright and beautiful and excited. 16 years old. The thing is, he showed me some catalogues for flowers for the coffin. Her voice is still quite steady, but there are tears running down her cheeks. And they were so terrible, Ella. The flowers. So awful.
I'm sorry.
Still, she is staring at the flower cooler. I know it sounds ridiculous, that it's what people expect. A wreath. But I can't have a wreath. I just can't have something so sad and grown up and horrible. I don't want a wreath for my daughter's coffin.
She turns back to me to check my response, which is at first pure puzzlement.
She's so young, you see. Too young for a wreath, don't you think?
At last she wipes at her face with the palm of her hand. Still, I don't know what to say to comfort her.
And the thing is, when I came here once before, I remember you had this extraordinary display in the window. The spring. Folds of greenery like hills. Like a meadow. With wild flowers. Primroses and wild garlic. And hedgerow flowers.
It was for a competition. I remember. I won a prize for it.
It was quite beautiful. And I was thinking on the drive here. That's what I would like. For my Anna. A sort of blanket of greenery. And meadow flowers. Nothing like a wreath. And I know it's a lot to ask. Probably quite wrong of me to ask at all, given all that has gone on between...
It would be my privilege. I would be more than happy to do this for you. Our eyes lock one final time.
I'm quite happy to pay, of course. Whatever.
She leaves her email address, and I tell her I will send my design to make sure it is right. But already I have decided there will be no charge. Already my mind is racing ahead as we part. Already I am sketching it in my head, and planning, and thinking how I can weave all the greenery through some kind of mesh to make the folds for the base. Like a meadow. Yes. And primroses. I know a supplier who has forced primroses. Greenhouse grown. I will order scores. All he has. I am making notes in my book, tears on my own cheeks now, knowing this must be truly special, like nothing I have created before. I can see it exactly, how it needs to cover the sadness that will be the oak and the brass handles, with the scent and the wonder of the meadows near their home, primroses and bluebells, wild garlic and campion, pink and lemon, and soft white petals, for a beautiful girl, gone too soon. For a girl, yes, much too young for a wreath.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of I Am Watching You by Teresa Driscoll, performed by Elizabeth Nolden. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number 1-800-222-3225 or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, PO Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.